You're listening to Wolves Potluck.
And welcome to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And we are here today to discuss our May 2025 book club pick, Blob, A Love Story by Maggie Su. As always, Books and Boba is supported in part by our listeners. So if you've been enjoying our podcast and want to become a bigger part of our book club, head on over to patreon.com/booksandboba, where as an official member, you can gain access to our members-only Discord server. And if you join us at the Honey Boba level, you also gain access to our monthly bonus podcast, Boba Chats, as well as the opportunity to help us pick a book club pick every quarter. Our next patron's choice is actually coming up in July. So if you join now, there's still time for you to get your recommendations in to let us know what you'd like us to read for book club in July.
Yeah, but it is May's almost over, meaning that our month is coming to an end. Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander Heritage Month.
You know, I really didn't do anything this year because I'm stuck at home with the kids. Did you go to any Asian events during May?
No, not really. I think I've just been like busy seeing friends who are like visiting town. But yeah, I mean, I did like our wedding banquet reading challenge. I have like two more prompts to finish and then we'll be done for our Asian Books Challenge for this year.
So pretty low-key Heritage Month for everyone here at Books and Boba. But like we mentioned, we do have our annual Asian Books Challenge going on our Instagram. And it's always cool to see all the book recommendations from our community through the book challenge. As you're listening to this podcast, there's still probably a day left in May. So you still have time to post your 2025 book grids. And, you know, if you need some more time, if you can't get it in time for the end of May, we're totally fine with you posting later as well. Just remember to tag both Books and Boba and hashtag Asian Books Challenge when you do. And we'll be happy to share your recommendations. But yeah, let's move on to our book club discussion. So once again, our May 2025 book club pick is Blob, A Love Story by Maggie Su. As always, on our book club episodes, we will be discussing the book in its entirety, including all plot points, twists, and reveals. And so, if you do care about being spoiled, this is your cue to hit pause on this podcast and finish reading the book. It's a pretty breezy read, I want to say. And once you're done, come back and listen to our discussion. And also, don't forget to participate on Discord or on Goodreads if you hear something you want to respond to. But yeah. With that said, let's get into it. Rira, can you kick off our discussion, as always, with the book jacket description of Blob?
Yeah, sure. The daughter of a Taiwanese father and white mother, Vai Lu has never quite fit into her Midwestern college town. Aimless after getting dumped by her boyfriend and dropping out of college, Vai works at the front desk of a hotel where she greets guests, refills cucumber water samovars, and tries to evade her bubbly blonde coworker. Little does Vi know, her life is about to be permanently transformed when she agrees to a night out with Rachel, her co-worker. In the alley outside the bar, Vi discovers a strange blob, a small living creature with beady black eyes. In a moment of concern and drunken desperation, she takes it home. But the blob is no ordinary pet. Becoming increasingly sentient, it begins to grow, shifts shape, and obey Vi's commands. As the entity continues to change, Vi is struck with a daring idea. She'll mold the creature into her ideal partner. Feeding it a stream of sweet breakfast cereals and American pop culture, the creature grows into a movie star handsome white man. But when Vi's desire to be loved unconditionally threatens to spiral out of control, she is forced to confront her lonely childhood, her aloof ex-boyfriend, and the racial marginalization that defines her relationships. A journey of self-discovery that teaches her it's impossible to control those you love. So I was looking up some interviews with Maggie, and in an interview with Day Beautiful, she said that Blob started as a 10-page short story, which then became a 10-minute play at like a playwriting workshop. And then she wrote it as a novel starting in 2020 while she was living in a basement apartment in Cincinnati during lockdown. And my God, it shows. Because when I was reading this book, I was like, it kind of reads like an extended short story. And we'll get more into it. But that was like my first impression. What about you, Marvin?
Yeah. So I came in kind of with my expectations set from kind of doing cursory glance at the reviews, which, you know, the book has some negative reviews, mainly due to the fact that people expected this to be monster smut. And it wasn't. So, like, I
don't think monster smut is the right word, but I get what you mean. People thought that this was kind of going to be like Frankenstein and like Shape of Water without like the monster sex. But yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You get. Yeah.
I mean, there were some reviews that were very angry that she does not have sex with the blob. And that's just upfront. She does not have sex with the blob. This is not a book about love that transcends species, right? And that's because this book really is more focused on like Vi's crisis of like identity, crisis of confidence, and like her overcoming the toll that a lifetime, you know, 23 years of microaggressions of living as an Asian in a small town in the Midwest has done to her, right? And a sentiment that a lot of our book club members on Discord, and myself included, have about the book is like, we're not really sure how to feel about it, right? And as I was reading, I was wondering, why does this story sound so familiar? And, you know, I think a few chapters in, after a couple of the flashback segments, it finally hit me. Like, this story reminds me of, you know, every year or so, one of these articles starts circulating across the Asian American internet, right? And they're always titled something like, Why I Stopped Dating Only White Men, or like How I Decolonized My Love Life. And it's usually written by an Asian woman explaining the internalized racism that not only affects their own self-confidence, but also, you know, what they see as like an ideal romantic partner. And I share this on our Discord discussion as well, but like this book really does feel like the novelization of one of those think pieces.
I can see that. It's funny how this book, the subtitle is a love story, and I'm like, is it a love story? While I was reading it, I'm like, it doesn't feel like a romantic love. It almost feels like narcissistic parental toxic relationship rather than like, oh, I want to shape this creature into like the man of my dreams. Obviously she goes about doing that, but I don't know. It reminded me a lot of like the parallels in parenting and how, and like the fear of your children, like being influenced by the environment that they're in.
So yeah.
That's kind of what I got from the relationship.
I mean, the book operates on a couple levels, right? And I think we should probably discuss them separately. They do, you know, overlap with each other, but you know, you have, on one hand, Vi's, you know, coming of age, like young adult coming of age story of like kind of coming to terms with how shitty she is, how shitty she's been to everyone around her and wanting to be better. And also the blob and what the blob represents, right? Because the blob represents a lot of the things. And one of the things I did not expect the blob to represent is like how you have no control of your children. Right. I guess that's kind of like the Frankenstein's monster connection too, which is like you can give something life, you can create something, you can, you know, do your best to raise them, but you can't expect them to listen to you unconditionally. Right. And it's something that she tries to do with the blob. Like she's concerned for the blob. She feels maternal. Is a maternal. She feels like responsible for the blob's well-being and safety and upbringing. And she also knows actively that she's not doing him any favors by giving him a steady diet of snack food and like Bravo
television.
Reality TV shows, yeah. Right?
Yeah. I don't know if you've read any articles about this, but I've been increasingly seeing more articles and like Reddit threads of people who are like having romantic relationships with their AI chatbots because a lot of people, I guess there are a lot of lonely people who feel like they can't connect with like real human beings. They've been like I mean, I can kind of see the appeal of it because it's a robot, like you feel like the stakes are low. So you get to be vulnerable in a way where it might be difficult for you to be vulnerable with a human. But anyway, there are some people who have started to see their AI chatbot as like a significant other. And unfortunately, a lot of these people are like alpha bros. And like, you know, they kind of see like it's appealing to them because the AI chatbot is very much like a yes man. Like they cater to like all of their wishes.
You can't be an alpha bro and also like be very invested in your AI chat like girlfriend. Like
I heard that like what is it? Like I don't know if this is true, but there was like a recent change where the AI chatbots could like refuse like sexual advances because it got just like out of hand and people were mad about that. Yeah, I'm in like a really weird corner of the internet where like I hear stuff about this, but it kind of reminded me of, you know, a Vi's relationship with the blob where it's like it's not exactly healthy and you have controlling behavior and that doesn't mean that you're in a romantic relationship. It's not real.
And yeah, I mean, I guess the blob obviously it's a metaphor, it's an allegory, right? For like this idealized partner that Vi creates for herself based on like what she thinks is like her ideal man, right? And this is kind of based on like, it's interesting because so she is at the beginning of the book, she is reeling in the aftermath of a really bad breakup, right? Her ex-boyfriend, her college boyfriend, Luke, breaks up with her at a Denny's. Like, and you know, a lot of these scenes are like, this book was, I wouldn't say like, I said it was a breezy read, but it was also like not easy to read, right? Because it's a lot of like, Vi goes through a lot of painful, cringy stuff. And I think it's interesting because I find myself sympathizing with her and empathizing with her, but also not, because a lot of this stuff is like self-inflicted, right? And, you know, we've been covering Asian American stories for a long time now, years now, right? And we've been at the game long enough to be able to, you know, recognize like certain tropes, right? Certain flavors of Asian American experience. And Vi's story definitely falls under like, you know, for lack of a better word, what I refer to as Midwest Asian American identity issues, right? Like the type of identity issues that happens to someone who grows up as like the only Asian in their community, right? And you know, it's not necessarily limited to the Midwest, but like it does feel like the vast majority of these types of stories either takes place in the Midwest or occur to people who grew up in the Midwest. And you know, as someone who grew up in Southern California, it's not something like it theoretically, like on paper, I understand what's going on. But personally, like I can't really relate to it because that's not how I grew up, right? I grew up amongst a lot of Asians. I grew up amongst an enclave. And you know, it really wasn't until I moved to the East Coast and met Asians who grew up in, you know, Indiana, in Ohio, that I finally understood that like these are real stories that actually happen to real people.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen some reviews as well, and a lot of people who did not like this book is because like they didn't like Vi as a character because she is an unlikable character, right? She is a messy Midwestern mixed race Asian American floundering in life. She's self-sabotaging. She is she's pretty much an alcoholic. She's self-centered, and she has like very little social skills. So, I mean, I like messy characters because they do interesting things. However, I did not really like Vi, and that was unfortunate. You know, I feel like Vi had a lot of potential I really feel let down by this book, and there's like no like nice way to say it. Like I expected the book to be more surreal, you know? I expected the blob to be like more present in the book, because like this book was kind of pitched in the vein of Bunny and convenience store women, and like they have very strong voices, right? Like the characters are very unique. And I don't know, I just feel like Vi goes through a lot of things, but her growth at the end, her self-realization that she is, you know, all of the problems that she's having in life is caused by her, and like suddenly having the motivation to fix it and become a better person. I don't know, it seemed kind of unearned. So I think like halfway through the book, I was just like, okay, you're messy, but when are you going to start your growth? Because it's not happening.
I mean, she kind of does in the middle, right? Because the part where, you know, she's raising this blob and she decides she wants to be a better person for this blob. Like, that's a very like parental thing. I think that's something a lot of people go through when they have their first child, which is like, okay, I need to get my shit together and like be a good example. It doesn't stick, right? But I thought that part was like really like relatable for me. And I do agree that like her final, like she hits rock bottom during the dinner party scene. And we can talk about it later, because it's also a really interesting relationship she has with Elliot, one of the other characters, who's kind of like her polar opposite, but not really. We can get into that later. But I do feel like the blob storyline, and the blob storyline is actually, it's pretty secondary, right? It's like the catalyst for a lot of her actions and for her like starting to change. And actually for her to realize stuff about herself, right? Because I think she does feel disturbed that her ideal person that she's molding this blob into is like generic white, like movie star guy. I thought that was a really interesting.
I expected more from that though, because, you know, it's like, I guess I expected more of a study into like why she's into white guys and like why this blob is turning into a white guy. I expected a little bit more of an allegory on race with the blob, and it just kind of seemed very surface level, and I was like, I feel like it was a missed chance.
I mean, I feel like that's explained through like a lot of her backstory, because we do see a lot of like the stories also has a lot of flashbacks to like all like the microaggressions that she experienced growing up, right? And the fact that like, you know, she is like, she's essentially, you know, your typical Midwest Asian, only Asian in your community, but like taken to the extreme, right? Because she like totally internalized a lot of that, right? Like her first crush and how he was like microaggressing against her, you know, her best friend who like she's jealous of and she pushes away. Like she does a lot of like shitty things as a kid too. But I think, I don't know, I feel like she is a product of feeling othered in society, but not having any outlet for it, right? Because we also see that her family doesn't do her any favors in that none of them want to talk about race. And I think that's kind of what's going on here. It's like no one around her is willing or able to talk about race, because they all either think they need to power through it or they think it doesn't matter. Like her mom is like very like, why are you sad? There's nothing wrong. And I do agree. I do wish there was a scene of like catharsis near the end where like she gets into it, right? I'm this way because you guys made me this way, or because you guys never talked about this way. But I also think it's a little realistic that like she doesn't get that catharsis with her parents, because, and this is again maybe stereotyping and generalizing, but boomer parents will never admit they did anything wrong, right? Like realistically.
Yeah. I mean, like going like back to like the parental thing, I mean, the thing is, like, this blob is pretty much a blank canvas, right? But we as humans, we carry our traumas and, you know, like, our parents' decisions are even going to impact, like, this empty canvas, you know? Like, even though they, like, had no involvement prior to meeting Bob the Blob, it's like, yeah, like, their decisions shaped him. And I guess I'm like, because he was fed a steady stream of American sitcoms and movies, I expected a little more, like, I don't know, microaggressions coming from the blob. Like, what if he, like, became something, like he became, like, tainted, you know, by, like, the racism and microaggressions that are shown on TV? I don't know. I just feel like there could have been, like, more ways to explore race, and not saying that like Maggie is obligated to do that, but as a reader, I kind of expected it to show up in the blob and it didn't really land for me.
I mean, I think there's kind of interesting that like the blob in becoming like the ideal, like you can create your ideal man, but that man's not going to necessarily go for you, right? It is interesting that Bob the blob
goes for the white girl.
Ends up going for like the perfect white girl too. And for me, I was like, no, that's okay. Because in the end, she is marrying a blob that's not a real person, right? And I think that's kind of, there's something there, right? You're like, your idea of like your perfect man or the perfect like kind of ideal partner is kind of a blob of like all of your experiences of like who that man should be. And, you know, Bob is kind of, he's still a blob at the end, right? He doesn't know who he is. And it's also pretty funny, like when one of our readers, one of our book club members, Nina, mentioned this on the Books and Books Discord, which is like, is Bob like a commentary on the fact that like if you're white presenting, violation of social norms and like being quirky and weird are more easily excused, whereas Vi is ostracized for demonstrating like similar behavior, right?
Yeah, similar, but also like not really, because it's really shitty. Whereas Bob is kind of coded as like
innocent,
like not taking social cues, almost like autistic in a way. But whereas like with Vi, I'm like, no, she's purposely malicious in a lot of occasions.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of like the more I learn about Vi and her upbringing and how she, you know, lives her life, the less like I felt bad for her, but I also didn't like her, right? And I think that's the biggest thing, like she's just not very likable. Even at the end, like she's, you know, I'm glad that she like turned this corner, but I would not want to be her friend, right? And I don't want to be responsible to
yeah
be
I mean
her
she's
friend.
Very self-centered. She's very yeah. like the fact that she has never washed a pan, like in her relationship with her ex-boyfriend, the way that she like never helps out her parents. Speaking of her parents, I kind of expected, you know, like you said, a catharsis, or I expected like more of a blow up, you know, like her parents, like point of contention is like her parents sold their house, and that's the only house that she's ever lived in, and she has like a lot of childhood memories attached to it. And she's like, how can you do that without telling me? And you know, like her mom is going through therapy and she's like talking about boundaries and stuff, and I'm like, that's interesting. I very rarely do we see a parent doing that. I expected some sort of conversation, as yeah. in like, hey, you're actually ruining my mental health, or like, I would like to have an identity outside of being your mom, like something. I just feel like it was kind of half cooked and it could have simmered for a little bit longer.
Yeah, I think also from the other side, like it would have been nice for her mom to be able to come to terms with the damage she did to her daughter.
Oh, yeah, right? Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
Like, she's not innocent at all, but, yeah.
I think it's interesting, like, going back to the blob, though, that, you know, she sits the blob down from TV and just, like, you know, the TV is the blob's, Bob the blob's babysitter for a while. And something that another book club member, Catherine, mentioned on Discord is, like, it's interesting that she starts him off on season 1 of Top Chef.
Where there's a bunch of Asians in it, and it's like, oh, which season is
and,
he watching?
Yeah. I mean, she mentions that she starts off at season 1, which because she's a completionist. And I wish that they went down that that path to it, that they her growth would be correlated with like watching more Top Chef, because Top Chef is a show with a lot of like one of the earlier kind of competence porn type of TV competitions that really had Asians at the top of their game, like showing off their like competence, right? Like season 3, the one in Miami was the first season where an Asian won the whole competition. So like early on in the show's run, like it had like a really great representation. A little sad they didn't go down that path, because it would have been interesting to see her like commentary on that. But that's just me knowing inside baseball on Top Chef.
A main character in this book is Rachel, her coworker, who is like this peppy blonde aspiring actress who is friendly to everyone. And Vi already like has like clocked her in, being like, oh, she can't stand not having someone not like her, which is why she's seeing me as a challenge and she is constantly inviting me out. And I don't know, it just seemed very I don't want to like stereotype, but it's just like classic white women syndrome of like them always thinking about like the world revolving around them. And it's like, you're not the main character. I'm sorry. You're
yeah. But in the same way, doesn't Vi do the same thing? Only like not as peppy.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. She's like the grumpy version of that, right? And you know, I think there is something poetic about Rachel being like this kind of a blob herself, right? She kind of fits
Everybody's
herself into like what she thinks other people want, like be their friends, and she ends up getting with Bob the Blob. And you know, the final chapter where we're at their engagement party and they realize they know nothing about each other, I thought that was pretty fun. I had a good chuckle on that scene.
Yeah, yeah. Also just like in my head, I'm like, how are you going to have paperwork for this wedding? Because you kind of need like identification and he doesn't have any. Like, what's, I don't know, in my head I'm like, logistics, but you know what, that's not my problem, it's Rachel's problem.
Yeah, I mean, in my head it's like the John Hamm thing from like 30 Rock, right? He's just so good looking that no one will care. They'll let him do whatever he wants, they'll let him be a doctor if
I did chuckle at Vi being like, well, I mean, I should benefit from all the white man privilege that I can get out of Bob. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, that is a fair point.
Yeah. I want to talk about Elliot, who is Rachel's friend from high school, who they meet at the drag show that they go to. And he is like kind of your quintessential, typical like Asian American golden boy, right? Going to law school, has a family that loves him. Unfortunately, they're also what I assume to be conservative Chinese and don't know that he is gay. And so his storyline with her, he kind of becomes her confidant in terms of like, you know, he's the first person she shows the blob to. And later on, he enlists her to be essentially his beard at his like family graduation party, right?
It did make me laugh because, like, the premise of Blob, it reminded me so much of the Greek myth Pygmalion. Mm-hmm. And then, like, the adaptation of Pygmalion is My Fair Lady. And I was like, oh, like, Elliot is trying to pass Vi off as this, like, perfect girlfriend. So I was like, oh, interesting layers here.
Yeah.
But,
which
yeah,
like
sidebar.
Which like if he knows anything about her and like he should have clocked this from the beginning, there's no way she would have like.
But he didn't have a choice though, because yeah. it was like the thing of like you, she's like, why can't you just enlist Rachel, who, you know, actually liked you and knows you? And he's like, you're the only Asian girl I know. So
yeah.
Again, and like the Midwest fact that Asian he said, problem. Oh, half Asian. He's like, you're half Asian, but that's good enough for my family. And I'm like, ooh, that is not the right thing to say.
Again, like
microaggressions from your own community.
Yeah. And again, like, you know, Midwest Asian problems, right? Like this is like kind of it to a T, which is like there's only two of us. And so we have to get paired up whether we like her or not. And, you know, I thought Elliot was a pretty like clever counterpart to Vi, because he's like so confident, right? He's like so confident in his identity. He grew up in a family that celebrates their culture and their heritage, but he still can't be himself around them. Like he's still hiding stuff from them. Like they're still like kind of in the same way that Vi's family has kind of failed her, right? Like his family is kind of filling him as well, right?
Yeah, he's still closeted and he doesn't feel safe. And it's understandable because when you, like, his family members seem to be really eager for him to have a girlfriend and they, like, mention it consistently. So it's like, okay, yeah, like,
yeah,
must be hard, like, living with family that you actually like. And they're constantly saying, so when are you going to get a girlfriend? When are you going to fall in love? When are you going to get married? It's like... Yeah.
That chapter, though, the dinner party chapter, I was cringing out of my skin. Like, not just like the overt, overcompensating? Like the over affection of like Elliot's family, like face cake is kind of going a little far. I feel like.
I feel like I've seen families do that, like as a joke, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think it's like, oh, you're like our deity, you know? Like we made this cake with your face on it. I feel like it's more of like a joke thing.
Yeah. But, you know, Vi, you know, she's told to keep low profile, right? Like, you know, I feel like Elliot knows that like Vi cannot be trusted to not like screw things up. So just don't do anything. But she gets into it because this is her first time. Like this is probably the first time she's been in a situation where like Asian people are so like comfortable being Asian, right? Because that's not something her family offers her. And so she proceeds to get really drunk and ends up like making a fool of herself, right?
Well, like before she makes a fool of herself, like she's like, oh, like these people don't know me, so I can be whatever I want to be. Like I can escape from my messy self. I can create a new persona. And she just keeps lying and lying. And at some point, Elliot is just like, you know, like they don't care if you say that you work at a hotel. Like you should just stop lying because you're just going to have to keep up with like the story that you just, you know, put yourself in.
Yeah, you can say she's creating a blob version of Vi, right? Based on what she thinks this new, what she thinks is her found family would want to see, right?
Yeah, yeah. But like what happens is she gets drunk and then she kisses Ivan, Elliot's cousin, in front of the entire family because, you know, they're outside and then the family is watching from their floor to ceiling window. And they're just like, how can you cheat on Elliot? Wow, you're such a terrible person. And Elliot does not step up to the plate to say, like, it's a perfect moment for him to come out. But
I actually think they yell at Ivan first, right? How could you do this to Ivan? To Elliot's, oh, sweet, boring Ivan. I liked him. So content with like chain restaurants and, you know, being himself.
I mean, spoiler, but Ivan and Vi goes on a date at like towards the end of the book. It sounds like they're starting on like this tentative beginning of a romantic relationship. And I was just like, yeah, Vi needs to date an Asian guy. But I feel like he gets it. So
again, I feel like this whole book is just an extended, like, you know, why I only dated white guys until now, like think piece, because it's
like,
kind of
you
that
need to date an Asian guy. And, you need to date a guy who'll get it.
And Ivan seems to be totally cool with just how, you know,
weird she is.
Right. I did like one thing that I know is like, I don't know if El Pollo Loco is different in the Midwest or not, but like, I've never ordered a margarita at El Pollo Loco. I'm pretty sure it's not that type of restaurant, at least here in SoCal. It's like a, you know, fast casual.
It's like a fast food chain.
Yeah, rotisserie chicken place. So
maybe the margarita is like canned or whatever.
Maybe.
It's like not. Yeah.
I did look up, does El Pollo Loco serve margaritas? Because like I've been in El Pollo Loco my entire life. My family loves El Pollo Loco. Like when we have extended family coming in, we order like a whole chicken and we have like all the tortillas and stuff. So like, I was like, am I missing something? Have I been missing El Pollo Loco margaritas all my life? And the only evidence I've seen of an El Pollo Loco with margaritas is the El Pollo Locos in, I want to say, the Philippines. Like overseas El Pollo Locos have alcohol.
I think it may have been a lapse in researching and copy editing.
but
it's fine. It's like a minor detail.
I just like, as someone who like has a very deep relationship with El Pollo Loco, I was like, This seems too fancy to be El Pollo Loco.
Yeah. I kind of wish there was like an interaction with Elliot and Alex, Vi's older brother, who is like a pediatric doctor. I think he's a doctor, or is he a nurse? I don't remember.
I want to say he's a pediatric like internal medicine. He's like at a hospital pediatric ward, right?
So, Alex... Yeah. Alex is like the golden boy of their family. And then you have Elliot, who is the golden boy of his family. But Elliot grew up in like a very accepting Asian household, whereas Alex kind of had like like growing up, like he was called Asian Alex because there were so many Alexes at his school. And, you know, he couldn't even bring himself to explain why he was called like AA to his parents because he was just so embarrassed about it. And it's like, I kind of wish we had like an interaction, but like that's just like a minor thing. I did like Alex and Vi's sibling relationship. I think it was so realistic in terms of like the older sibling being like, what the fuck are you doing with your life?
Yeah. What's wrong with you? There's that whole sequence where after she hits rock bottom, right? Bob leaves her. She ruins her relationship with Elliot. Her apartment floods that like she kind of essentially shuts down for like a few days. And you see like his text starting with like, what's wrong with you? Mom and dad are worried, to like, hey, are you okay?
You it's know? Like, why are you like, freeloading off of your aging parents? And it's like, you're so selfish, blah, 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 blah. And then he's like, actually, you sound like you must be really depressed. Are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, that is like real siblinghood right there.
Yeah. And especially from a family who like, by all accounts, do not talk about feelings, do not talk about difficult, negative things, right? Like, it shows that they still cared in their own way. But, you know, part of me also wishes, like, if this is going to be like a coming of age type of story, like I do wish like them talking about like being like, you know, I wish this book was maybe more aspirational, right? Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah. I see what you mean. Yeah.
I wish it showed like a path to like, here is a way to like reach self-actualization and healing, right? Because I do agree that like her decision to like kind of pull herself out of the pits of despair, it didn't feel earned, right? She kind of just
decides. It didn't feel like organic. Yeah.
And you know, sometimes maybe that's just what it is, but it kind of feel like, for me, I feel like 2 months from now, she'll be right back in the bottom, right? Kind of feels like it's like a temporary, kind of the same way that she pulls herself up after, you know, deciding to take care of Bob the Blob, which is like, this is all like, this is progress until she hits the next roadblock. And she has not proven to me that she's able to overcome the next thing that goes wrong in her life, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think like the portrayal of her depression and also like feeling very self-loathing and like her being like, I can't apply to the Peace Corps. Like something is like stopping her because she's self-sabotaging. And I think that's like very common when you do have depression. Although Luke, the ex-boyfriend, like, he's also not a great person either. He sounded like he checked out of the relationship, like, way early on. But also, Vi was not a great partner either.
Yeah.
Like she kept ghosting him at events. And, you know, like, it's just, like, at a certain point, you, like, if you're not going to be there for your partner, then they're not going to, like, seek you out. So I was like, she deserves better, but also does she?
It was a very toxic combo, right? Because on one hand, you have like the white guy who like, yeah, like he probably liked the idea of having an Asian girlfriend, but like not the responsibility that comes with it, right? Of like having a partner from a different culture. Whereas she, you know, growing up idealizing white dudes, but also feeling othered. Like she has a constant need of like affirmation, right? She needs, mm-hmm. like the reason she ghosts him because she wants him to like call after her. She wants him to prove that he still notices her, that he still sees her, that he's concerned that she's not there anymore. And that's very like, it's very arrested development behavior, right? That's like a teen shit.
That's what toddlers go through, you know, like, like they don't know how. Like, they want attention, but they don't know how to express it in a healthy way. So they pull stunts like these. And it's like, okay, well, you're, like, in your 20s. Like, grow up. But that's her character.
Yeah.
You know?
And, like, you know, she hasn't changed since middle school. Like, her story with her I forgot her former best friend's name. But, like, a girl
Lottie.
That, like... Yeah, Lottie. Who, like, I feel like that rock bottom should have been, like, her, like, first and only rock bottom.
Like, her finding out that... her crush likes Lottie, and you know, even though Lottie says like I don't like him, like there's like this intense jealousy, and pretty much she lashes out by doing like pulling a mean girl moment where she writes like all the things that like Lottie is insecure about. Like it's like, oh, she has smelly feet, she doesn't shave, blah 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 blah. even though it was like unintentional, like she wanted to just, you know, have her crush read that and not the entire school. But of course, that's what happens in middle school. You know, don't write a burn book if you don't want it to be read. And it's just like, wow, that was like a terrible thing to do. But also at the like at the end when, you know, Lottie is not in school anymore and she finds out, oh, like her mom and Lottie left because they were because like the father slash husband was abusive. And she's just like, yeah, but it seems like she left at a convenient time, though. And I'm like, girl, what? Like, and not this, everything is about you.
Yeah. And all this over a boy who like
is mid.
Yeah. Right. Like, I think, you know, the unforeseen side effect of like desiring
white men who are mid
is
and,
that like, yeah,
you know, you're taught that they're the ideal. And it's just like they're not that great. I'm sorry. Just.
Yeah, because like, you know, it's become a pattern, right? And even like even this blob that becomes her ideal white man, like he's also kind of just like he's still a blob. He's just like, I won't say mid because he is a sweet boy, but at the same time, like there's nothing like there is nothing attractive about him besides his looks. Right. Like,
yeah,
he has no prospects. He has no identity. He has no, like you said, like, we're just going to spend her entire life kind of, like, dealing with his, like, non-person status, right?
I mean, it seems like he's building his personality, though, like an actual child, you know? As they experience the world more, their vocabulary grows, and they find their interests, and that's, you know, that's what makes us human, like, finding things that we like and dislike and creating our own identities around that. I do want, what were your thoughts when Bob says, I am a slave and I would like to go outside? And I'm like, wow, this is some like ex machina like moment.
It is.
It just ethics are.
Yeah. I mean, he's not wrong, right? He is. And I think, again, it goes back to like Bob as like this like mishmash of allegories, right? On one hand, he is an allegory of like an ideal like romantic partner, but on the other hand, he's also an allegory for children and the shit they say, right?
I mean, he's not wrong though. He is a slave. Like, this is a very toxic relationship he's in with Vi. Like, she's almost like equivalent of like a narcissistic parent, because like she's seeing her quote-unquote child like a manifestation of like all of her dreams and hopes as an extension of themselves, because she's only like creating him to be things that she likes instead of just letting him be him.
Yeah.
So I'm like, definitely. He is kind of like a slave, and you know, like keeping him locked up in the apartment is quite messed up. Yeah,
the fact that she like ties him down, that she like, it's, if this was not like a blob person, even like, you know, at this point we do see Bob as like a person, not a blob anymore. It's like, it's, I wonder if it's like a metaphor for like the things we do to people when we don't humanize them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because she justifies all the stuff she does to Bob because he's just a blob. He's not a real person, but he is, you know, he is exhibiting people-like behavior.
Yeah, and she's like, what happens if he goes outside? You know, like, it's unsafe for him. And it's like, well, is it, though? Like, I feel like that is an excuse that you're telling yourself. And also, like, when Bob becomes, like, Bob befriends strangers, like, he befriends, like, a bunch of frat boys, and she's like, these are, like, what do you mean these are your friends? They're not real. It's like, just because you can't make friends and meaningful connections doesn't mean that, you know, he can't. And that just reminded me of a lot of like toxic parental child relationships where parents think that they can control their child and control the relationships that they will be in the future. And it's like, can't do that.
Yeah. I guess with that, I kind of wish there was more of a connection between her own relationship with her mother, right? Like, and how much of her relationship to Bob is passed down from her own generational trauma. obviously she doesn't feel control. Like, she doesn't feel control over her life. This is the reason why she does all these like really shitty things to the people that she ostensibly loves, right? The reason why she ghosts Luke in the middle of events. The reason why she, you know, doesn't return texts and doesn't, you know, she wants to feel in control, right? She wants confirmation, right? And she's not patient enough, or she's not trusting enough to like just like, you know, wait for it. She needs to like confirm. She needs to know now. And in some ways, she's trying to confirm that it's not there, right? Like, she knows she's being a butt, and she knows doing this will push them away. And so she just wants to know and get it over with. But then when it does happen, you know, when Luke does break up with her at the Denny's, like, she also can't handle that, right?
Yeah, I mean, it all goes back to her parents. It always goes back to the parents. It's always going to be like the parents' fault. Joking, but not joking. Because her parents are fixers. They've really, like, it's rare to see such supportive parents who are like, oh, you failed? Well, like, we can find a way to help you find the next step and figure out, like, okay, how do we help you get over this breakup? How do we, it's like, you missed an assignment? Okay, how can we, like, get your teacher to give you an extension or whatever? They're constantly fixing. And I'm like, you know, if she's self-sabotaging and she's so messy, and I think in the back of her brain, she's like, oh, but someone else will clean it up for me. And it's such, like, a immature mindset.
Yeah.
And she also has, like, she talks about, like, all the weird pets that she's had in her life, and she wasn't able to take care of any of those pets. Like, she wasn't able to take care of her snake. Was like, you know, they released it into the wild, and I'm like, is that allowed? I don't think that's allowed.
It's a crime. Yeah.
Yeah. And it just, like, goes to show, like, I think her parents knew that she was having a really hard time, like, coming into herself and thinking about other people and forming connections. And they're like, maybe she'll form a connection with a pet, but she fails in doing so. You kind of see how, like, her taking care of the blob is like, it's another exotic pet that she is really struggling to take care of.
Yeah, she does not do a good job, right? She does, like, he just, if Bob the Blob was an actual kid, like, someone would be calling CPS on her for sure. And, you know, it is interesting because we're so used to seeing parents that are more like Elliot's parents in, like, Asian American coming of age types of stories. And, you know, this is just to show that
they're also so supportive, though. They're, like, so warm and affectionate,
but also,
like,
controlling.
What we see,
controlling, and also, like, you know, like, supportive as long as you fit their mold of a golden child, right? And, you know, I think it's just interesting to see, like, because Vi's parents are the types of parents that, like, a lot of us growing up Asian American wished our parents were, right? And even then, like, I think it's interesting that even with those types of parents, you can still get pretty messed up.
Yeah.
All right. Well, any last thoughts on Blob before we call it an episode?
I mean, I said this before. The book was pitched in the vein of Bunny and the Convenience Store Women, and those two books have very strong voices and really sharp humor. So I kind of expected this book to be funnier, but I don't know if it was, like, meant to be intentional. Like, Vi thinks that she's funny with, like, her deadpan humor, but I'm like, you're not that cool. You're not funny at
all.
She's
cringe, yeah. She's like,
so, like, the humor kind of fell flat for me. And then the same thing with, like, the structure. There's a lot of flashbacks, and sometimes it gets, like, a little bit disorienting because it's just, like, it's like, too much. And, the flashbacks are triggered because she's reminded of a moment with her ex, which then leads her to something else. And then that reminds her of her ex again. And that just seems to be, like, the format of the book. And I'm like, I'm kind of getting bored with it. And also like not in love with the prose. It seemed very much like I did this and then I did this, I ate that. And it's like very didactic, almost like stage directions, which is why I'm like not surprised that this was a play, like a 10-minute play. And it just seems like a very stretched out short story, a 10-minute play. A lot of the criticism I have about like the characters' relationships feeling a little bit underbaked, like I feel like you can get away with that in short form because you have such a limited time to just like get the characters, but you have to fill in so much when it comes to like novel writing. So I just feel let down. I expected this book to be weird. I expected this book to be like super funny, and it was just not that book. And I don't know if it's just me as a person, like if this is like a reader problem, and it's like maybe it was funny to other people, but that was just like my takeaway.
I mean, I feel like the humor in this book comes from just like the fucked up things that Vi does and says. And it's like she thinks she's being funny, but everyone, including readers, just thinks it's cringe, right? Like this book has a lot of moments where like the audience would be like, oh, like this is very uncomfortable because she is not, you know, doing well. I think for me, at some point, I just like went with it. Like the book is written, like you said, in a very like, it's not exactly stream of consciousness, but very like, you know, here's what happened. And at some point, I just kind of went with it. You know, I went with this journey of this character that like I felt bad for, but I didn't like. And, you know, I think I chose to see it as like, this is a character that's very stuck in the past, right? She can't move forward because she is constantly reminded of all the things, all the reasons why she sucks and all the sucky things that she's done and is still doing to others and herself. And so in that way, I was like, okay, like, I hope things get better for her. And, you know, hopefully it's not explicitly stated, but like being able to let go of Bob, right? As he goes off with Rachel to LA to pursue their dream of acting, her, you know, accepting a relationship with Ivan, who like, you know, if this was Vi in the beginning of the book, would like never entertain a relationship with like an Asian guy, right? I think there are signs that she's turning the corner. Again, nothing has proven to me that this will stick, but, you know, as a character who knows she sucks and wants to get better, I think, you know, at the end, I do hope she does get better. But at the same time, like I still would not be your friend. Like I would like stay away from this woman.
I mean, maybe she can recover a friendship with Elliot. Who knows?
Yeah. He seems to have turned the corner too a little bit, but you know, he has his own shit to deal with. Everyone has their own shit to deal with, I think, in this book. It's just, are you going to be the type of person who makes your problem everyone else's problem? Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, I want everybody to just move out of that town for like a year, yeah. You know, and then come back. It's like the world is bigger than this Midwestern college town. You know? Like, get out of your bubble.
If she had gone to college at like a, you know, UC or even Chicago or like a bigger city, like I feel like this would be a story about her like Asian American awakening, right? That we see a lot, but because she's stuck in her bubble, she was not allowed to do so. So I think that's kind of my read on it, is like as an older, like as you know, a 41-year-old Asian American dude who like has worked across a lot of different communities, right? You know, sometimes, yeah, you just gotta see that like the world is bigger. In order to move forward.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you like live in a city and you lived in like the majority, you were never part of like the marginalized community. It's just like you should move out of your town like for a short bit. Like
yeah.
Experience life outside of the community that you were raised in. I think that's very important and vital for anybody's like personal growth.
Yeah, yeah. Totally agree. I think my world view opened up significantly when I moved to the East Coast and experienced being a minority for once in my life. And, you know, I think it's easy to just have a dim view on her, but she doesn't know any better. So, you know.
She's 22. She has like so much time to be a better person.
Yeah.
You know, like there's a little bit of hope there.
Yeah.
But I would love to hear your guys's thoughts. So if you guys have just finished the book, like join our conversation on Discord. Like what did you guys think? Did you think that, you know, Vi was a good person?
Like, I think in like,
did you like her?
On Discord so far, everyone is, I think we're on the same page. Like, not sure how to feel about her. Don't like the things she does, but also feels bad for her because she doesn't know any better, right? So, definitely let us know your thoughts on either the book or on our discussion, anything we talked about. And if you're not on Discord, you can join it by joining our Patreon or by letting us know your thoughts on our Goodreads forums. We also take a look there as well. So, yeah, that'll do it for our discussion of Blob, A Love Story by Maggie Sue, our May 2025 book club pick. Thank you so much for listening to our discussion. I guess before we go, Rira, can you tell our listeners what book we are reading for June 2025?
Yeah, so for June, it's my turn to pick, and I chose After Parties by Anthony Viesna So. And this is a short story collection about Cambodian American life. And it also offers like offers insight into the intimacy of queer and immigrant communities. So perfect for Pride Month as well.
Yeah, looking forward to discussing this book with you at the end of June. And for our Patreon supporters, keep an eye on the Discord where I will be posting this month's reading schedule by the end of the weekend. And yeah, that'll do it for this episode of Books and Boba. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see y'all next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Books and Boba. This podcast was hosted by Marvin Yue and Rira Yu, and edited and produced by Marvin Yue. Follow the book club on Twitter and Instagram by going to @booksandboba and engage with us on Goodreads on our Goodreads group. You can also check out past episodes of the podcast by going to booksandboba.com and by subscribing to us on your favorite podcast app. Don't forget, you can support Books and Boba and Asian American authors by purchasing books at our bookshop.org account. Check out the link in our show notes and also at booksandboba.com. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts featuring unique voices and stories from the Asian diaspora. Learn more about the collective and check out our fellow Potluck shows by visiting the website podcastpotluck.com. Thanks for listening.
Hey, sports fans. Welcome to Asians in Hockey. You may not realize it, but there's a rich history of Asians and AAPI folks who have contributed to the legacy of the greatest game on ice. From classic legends like Julie Chu and Robin Bawa, to current greats like Lia Lum and Nick Suzuki, and even rising stars like Akane Shiga and Jason Robertson. We'll cover their stories, celebrate their accomplishments, and learn about their impact on the sport of hockey. I'm Nate Nakao, former beer league player, occasional youth hockey coach, and longtime hockey fan, and I'll be your host as we take a look at the rise of Asians in hockey. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Part of the Potluck Podcast Collective.